Recording now. Level's looking good. Okay, say something.
Hey, this is CK from Battery Staple. How's it going?
All right, looks good to me. All right, let's get started. 3, 2, 1. Hello, everybody. This is Mega Ran, and I'm back with another episode of Random Encounters, where I talk to different folks in different walks of life and find out what's going on. So today, I'm talking to Chris King with Battery Staple. Hey. Now, you may know Chris, but you may know his game. Now, 20XX I played in, what was that, 2015?
Somewhere in there, right? We were we launched in Early Access right before Thanksgiving 2014. Finished Early Access on PC August of 2017. Somewhere okay. In there, probably.
Nice, nice. So one thing I do appreciate about these games is that you guys take your time with them. You make sure that, you know, all of the loose ends are tied up. And so how important is that to you to launch a game on day one that's completely ready to go and not having to be patched on day one?
It's a really great question. So it depends on whether we're talking about early access or 1.0. So certainly once we get to 1.0, you know, making sure the experience is complete, like relatively bug-free. Like obviously every piece of software, including games, has bugs, right? Anybody who tells you their software is bug-free is lying to you. But when we launch in early access, we're pretty okay with some level of bugs there. Like obviously any amount of sort of critical game ruining stuff, we want to get out of the game as soon as possible. But so much of why we love the early access period is that we can very safely ship the product that is, you know, it's fun to play, it's satisfying, it's a complete feeling experience. But we know we still have kind of a lot of work to do, both in terms of sort of systems iteration and polish and getting fan feedback from our player base to sort of go through and iterate on those designs that much further. Like for 20XX for us, our early access community was such a critical part of the game's success. I was describing this to somebody earlier, saying that the good design decisions that went into 20XX during early access were probably half fan driven. Like it was probably 50% team internal and 50% from the fan base. You know, I really mean it when I say that the game would have been far worse without our amazing early access community involved there. In terms of 1.0, you know, we want to make sure that what's so nice about these sort of these really flexible release schedules that we have is that we set 1.0 not around specific deadlines set by a publisher. You know, we don't set 1.0 around any arbitrary date and time. It's really just, when do we feel like we're approaching a product we can say, this is complete, this is 1.0, and then sort of set the date from there. So that kind of flexibility of scheduling lets us, you know, set 1.0 at a comfortable time, so we don't find ourselves crunching, we don't find ourselves like, you know, grinding hard for the finish. We can just set a very comfortable 1.0 and, you know, guarantee that by the time we get there, we have like a relatively bug-free game.
Nice, nice. When it's done, it's done.
Bingo.
That's what I tell my fans. When's the new thing coming? When it's done.
Exactly. It's amazing to have that flexibility. It's life would be very hard to live any other way.
Yeah. So let's talk about Battery Staple. What is Battery Staple Games? Who is Battery Staple Games? And just tell me a little bit about your company, your team.
A lot of good questions. So we started Battery Staple in 2013. At the time, it was, you know, it was really, so 20XX, the core team that made the first game, was really myself, a single artist, Zach Artis, who lived kind of near me in Maryland, over on the East Coast at the time. And it was really just the two of us for a considerable period. We ended up bringing on Brandon Ellis to do the soundtrack for the game, which is, of course, he's stellar. That work is amazing. We brought on the guys at Firehose Games in Boston to sort of help us with marketing support and some of that sort of business development kind of work that we were, you know, woefully bad at it because, you know, it was our first game. We didn't really know anybody in the industry. We had no idea how to do this stuff. So that was really most of the team for the first game. This time around, we've grown pretty considerably. There are about 10 of us total now. So I'm now near Seattle. We've got kind of people all over the really, really geographically distributed at this point. So I'm here in Seattle. Our art director, Glauber Kotakis, in Sao Paulo, Brazil. We have three team members that are in Germany. We have a couple of guys on the East Coast of the States. We have partners that work in Hong Kong. So we basically have people all the way across all of the time zones at this point, which is, you know, it's sort of a big part of our team strategy, right? Obviously, it is fortunate to already be a remote team in years like, you know, pardon my language. Well, I don't know if I can curse, so I won't. 2020 is a bad year. I'll put it in those terms. But it would be a far worse year if we were also trying to deal with a transition to remote work from in person. You know, part of our kind of team building strategy with 30XX has been, you know, I could never get all of these people in the same place because we're so far spread out that, you know, bringing everybody to live in the States, obviously, like, most people don't want to move. And obviously, you know, facilitating all those moves and having that kind of office space would be hugely expensive. So instead, you know, we manage a remote team of folks that can all, you know, work from the comfort of wherever they happen to be. And we just have, you know, we have workflows and processes that, you know, kind of mitigate the sort of problems that can arise from not all being in the same space. You know, in an office, it's handy to be able to sort of walk down the hall and, you know, ping somebody that's next to you for help with something and sort of get that immediate feedback. Mm-hmm. Instead we sort of work around that. You know, we basically sync up with everybody, you know, once every couple of weeks, try to keep this sort of all team meetings to a minimum. And instead everybody kind of has, you know, we kind of going back to what I was saying earlier with our sort of flexible work schedules and trying to avoid crunch. You know, we always have kind of priorities that we're working on, but every team member kind of has a couple of different tasks they know they need to be sort of tackling at any given point in time. Specifically because if I know, you know, if I'm doing an art implementation task, if I'm getting some of Glauber's sprites into the game, for example, I know that, you know, he's like 5 hours after me time zone wise. And if I'm working, you know, late at night, there's a pretty good chance he's already asleep. And so I have a number of different tasks on my plate at any given point in time, so that if I'm in the middle of that implementation and I have some questions for him, I can just sort of, I can send those questions off. And in the event that he's not there, which, you know, is obviously totally fine, I have a whole bunch of other stuff I can kind of be working on at the same time. So I can just sort of switch gears and work on something else for a little while. And that kind of structure has been kind of really critical to working on a remote team of this size.
Nice. Awesome. I was going to ask, and you asked a lot of it, how life has changed for you, you know, I guess comparison, because when I saw you guys last, that was March, that was PAX East, that was like the last kind of outing for a lot of people. So is there a major way that life has changed for you professionally as well as like personally?
You know, everybody is dealing with their own stuff in 2020. I'm not gonna tell you it's been like a wonderful year. Like, it's obviously been a very challenging year in a number of respects, but it seems really, really sort of, I don't know, cheap for me to really complain about any of this. You know, we're fortunate enough to be in a strong financial position. You know, we're already remote. You know, 2020 has been really rough on a lot of people, like for a number of reasons. And it hasn't been all that rough on us, all things considered. So obviously it's been a challenging year, but we don't have a lot of room to complain.
Gotcha. All right. So 20XX represents a lot of firsts for me, actually. One of the first, it might be the first game that I downloaded Steam to play.
Oh my gosh, that's amazing. That is just, I wish I were recording.
I was not a Steam guy. I was not into playing games on PC. And someone's like, but look at this game. And I looked at it. And I'm like, okay, how do I play this? Let's go. And also, I think in that process, it was the first experience that I had with like a roguelike type game. So talk to me about the difference between a roguelike and roguelite, and how the whole idea of making these games procedurally generated happened with you guys.
Yeah, sure. Well, I'll tackle the second question first, how we decided to make this kind of a proc gen jam. So when we started making 20XX back in 2013, I always knew that I just wanted to be able to play, you know, more of this really crisp action platforming stuff, kind of like a Mega Man X, like an X4. I always knew that I wanted more of that. It sort of seemed to flow naturally, given that Binding of Isaac had become popular around, I guess, a little bit earlier than that. Spelunky was popular around the time. And the idea of making one of these games, you know, with random level generation, so you could sort of enjoy it as much as you want, seemed like a natural shoe-in. And at the same time, we knew that there had to be some kind of differentiator between us and just sort of a classic action platformer. in order for us to stand out a little bit, because this was our, you know, this was our first commercial title. I had no game design experience, and the same was true of most of the team. I knew there had to be something else to stand out there because I wasn't going to win on execution alone. I knew I didn't have the experience for that to be a reliable way to try and compete. In hindsight, I completely underestimated the number of people who were going to see 20XX and really just want to play a non-roguelike version of it. I wildly underestimated the number of people who would just really want to play sort of like a static version of 20XX. And to that end, we actually just last week for 30XX, we announced a new feature called Mega Mode, which is basically a way to enjoy 30XX without the permadeath and without levels changing when you die. So the levels are still randomly generated. You can still make a 30XX Mega Mode run from scratch with completely new levels whenever you want. But in Mega Mode, when you tackle one of those levels, it will stay the same until you finish it. So if you die, instead of losing your whole run, there's no permadeath in Mega Mode, you'll go back to HQ, you can buy some upgrades, maybe tackle the level again if you're feeling like, oh, you know, I can totally do that. I just messed up here. I'm going to give that another shot. Or you could say, you know, this challenge is a little spicy for me right now. Why don't I try this other stage first and then I'll come back? So we're sort of addressing that kind of unmet need for 20XX in the sequel this time around. So that's kind of question one or part two of your question. Yeah. The differences between roguelike with a K and light with a T. You know, for most of the gaming public, those are almost the same term. Most people see those and use them interchangeably. And so in general, we call it a roguelike with a K because it's the sort of the more openly accepted term. The terms are a little bit different. You know, roguelike with a K, obviously it sort of depends on who you're talking to, but usually refers to games that either have, you know, permadeath and no permanent upgrades. So the only thing that changes in the game as you play from run to run is your skill level. You know, there are people who will take roguelike even further and sort of demand that roguelikes must be turn-based and kind of have the look and feel of like the old Rogue, you know, top-down 2D sort of adventure game. A lot of people don't. That's kind of up to taste. Roguelite, on the other hand, with a T, usually applies to games that have more of a sense of either fewer roguelike elements involved, so like maybe they only sort of have a random level generation, or they only sort of have permanent death, or they don't have permanent death at all, but are still replayable. Roguelites often have more elements of permanent power progression in them. So, you know, more stuff you can spend, you know, currency or whatever you've earned on in between runs that will make your character objectively stronger when you start the next game. So like Rogue Legacy is kind of the quintessential old example of a roguelite with a T, right? Because when you play through Rogue Legacy from run to run, your character gets so much more powerful that by the end of your plays with Rogue Legacy, your character is like orders of magnitude stronger than you started. And like the game is theoretically finishable with none of those upgrades, but good freaking luck, right? Like it's definitely not intended to be completed or intended that most players will ever attempt that. With 30XX, we have not only a few permanent upgrades, you know, nowhere near the level of power progression that you would expect in a Rogue Legacy, but still a pretty sizable number of upgrades, but also a lot of upgrades that are more information systems based. So instead of all of the upgrades being you start with more health, you start with more energy, you start with more money, here is ways your character is objectively better. Instead, kind of what we do is we give a lot of the upgrades, you receive more choices. So they're upgrades that wouldn't necessarily make a lot of sense to the player when you first start playing the game. So a good example of this, and this one is in the demo, it's called the Salvager Circuit. When you pick it up, or when you first unlock it, now every time you come across a power-up of any kind in the game, you have the choice of either picking it up and receiving it as a power-up, or you can press a different button and you'll salvage it for a different sort of randomly chosen benefit. So you'll know what the benefit will be before you choose to salvage it, but you'll see, you know, oh, you come across an armor upgrade and you can either pick up the armor upgrade or you can salvage it for +4 maximum health. So you're kind of making a decision with every power up you come across. Do I want the actual sort of stock abilities that this power up will grant me? Or do I really need whatever the salvager benefit happens to be for this item more? So basically every time the player comes across an item, they suddenly have a choice. And so when you first start playing the game, that's locked. You don't have it available to you. because you don't necessarily know the systems well enough to make the choice anyway. But very shortly into sort of the unlock tree, you'll unlock this thing and you realize, oh, I now have a choice every time I come across one of these. And the upgrade system for the game is kind of full of those, very much making it a roguelite with a T.
Nice. Okay. Very cool. This is making me excited to go back into it and play some more. I've been running through the demo, having a good time with it. I'm sorry, the pre-alpha. And I run into these things called glory zones. Can you explain those?
Yeah, sure. So glory zones are, they're side path teleporters you can find in the middle of the level. They are almost universally platforming challenges. So you teleport off, you're in kind of a side area of the level. That's kind of, it's kind of self-contained. It only connects the level via, you know, an entrance and an exit teleporter. And if you can complete the entire glory zone, you're awarded with a core aug at the end. And a core aug is, it's kind of the equivalent of like a Mega Man X, like armor capsule part, except sort of one of the things we're doing differently from 20XX is this time, cores are much more heavily customizable. So in 20XX and in sort of the Mega Man X games, you can usually only use one armor part per slot, right? One buster, one chest, one helmet, one pair of boots, right? In 30, one of the things we're doing differently is instead of having sort of slot requirements for each of those, you have a certain number of core points that you start the game with. And each core that you can equip will cost a certain number of those points to use and to keep on. So if you really want to, you could have, you know, both the Dracopin's boots for double jump and the Oxjack's blitz for air dash. And if you want to spend your core points that way, you can equip both of them at once and you'll have double jump and air dash, but you'll usually be foregoing the ability to equip something else that might be awesome in order to get all that extra mobility. So it basically makes the player choose a lot more about which cores to bring along and which ones to equip at any given point in time. And then when the failure finishes the glory zone, they teleport back, they sort of rejoin the main level.
Nice. Okay. Well, that's exciting. Now, as a guy who knows a little bit about flying close to Capcom's intellectual property, son. Yeah,
but we could have a long conversation about this.
We could definitely do that. What do you have to say about that? Like, I guess my question around that is like, how risky is this, if it is at all? You know, as far as copyrights are involved with this stuff.
So we don't think it's risky at this point. We knew when we first started with 20XX that there was, you know, there was a reasonable chance that they might say something. We didn't really have a strong feeling of how high that risk was. But at the same time, you know, we never assumed, we never imagined 20XX would become the kind of larger success that it ended up being. We always assumed, so I assumed that when I started making 20XX, that I was going to work on it for something like 6 to 12 months. I was going to build a very basic game in C++. We were going to release it. It was going to do whatever it was going to do, and then we were going to move on. I originally started making 20XX as a portfolio piece, really. Like, I wanted to have made my own game and my own C++ engine because I wanted to use it kind of as a resume item to then go and work for Bethesda Softworks, who were located just down the street from me where I started making 20XX. You know, so at the time, we knew there were potential legal concerns there, but also the stakes were so much lower because we always assumed this was kind of a lower scope project anyway. You know, at this point, 20XX has been out and finished for multiple years on PC and consoles. We certainly assume if Capcom were going to say anything that they would have done it by now. You know, we believe that we are in no real legal jeopardy there. I don't think we're like really flaunting any like legal issues there. You know, we know that everything we're doing is, you know, it's distinct. We're not using any of their universe, their IP, their characters. You know, I don't believe they have, you know, legal protections on Blue Shooty Robot and Red Sword Swingy Robot. You know, so we don't really think we're in any legal jeopardy there. And we certainly hope that, you know, if they were going to say something, they would have done it before now, when we've kind of been publicly visible for the better part of like 6 years.
Absolutely. All right. So, what would be a dream scenario? 30XX comes out, sells 1 million copies, wins every Game of the Year award. Or Capcom hires Battery Staple to create Mega Man X9.
Oh, daggers to my heart. I mean, so the obvious answer is Capcom hires Battery Staple to make Mega Man X9. No question, no contest, no whatsoever. I would I would give up pretty much everything that defines my world for that opportunity. That would be, that's dream of dreams right there, right? Like there's no higher anything that I can really imagine from like a career perspective, from a work perspective, or as like a, you know, as a passionate Mega Man fan perspective either, right? Like it's such a perfect union of so many of the things mm-hmm. that matter to me in my world. Obviously, if 30XX could sell a million copies and win all of the various awards, that would be incredible and a wonderful place to be. Getting to helm or even work on Mega Man X9 in a major way would be such a huge, colossal honor that I can't imagine that being too hard of a choice, even though both of those are such incredible outcomes.
Yeah, I say either one is a win, but
right? Yeah, I think I could rest my hat for a day or two on either one of those just fine. But no contest.
All right. You picked the right one. do you have any favorite pieces of music in this game?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, one of the most satisfying things about my job for me working on 30XX is getting to see all of the new media of all types that sort of comes into the game while we're kind of spinning the thread together and sort of putting everything in one place. Mm-hmm. And getting to hear Brandon, aka City Fire's music for the first time, mm-hmm. either while he's like shopping new themes and like he's sort of figuring out, you know, maybe this will work here. Maybe I'd like to try and put this over there. What do you think of this section? How is this chorus? Do we need super chorus on top of this? That back and forth with him is one of the most satisfying parts of the project to me. The exact same goes for seeing our new, our new sprites, our new background art from Fabian and Glauber for the first time. It's so satisfying getting to see all of that sort of get put together in the mix. And get to sort of see all of it for the first time. In terms of favorite tracks for me from 30XX so far, I mean, man, it's really almost all of them. So we have the tracks we've been using for the Echo Cave theme, which are currently called Weakness and Entropy for the boss theme, are huge favorites. The High Vault tracks that we don't have publicly viewable yet because we haven't shown High Vault are called Skybound and... Gosh, what is the name of the boss theme? I'm missing it off the top of my head. Zenith? It's Zenith. Are absolutely stellar. Like, I'm very much eating our team's dog food on this one. I love all of the music in the game. And so having to pick favorites is like, it is almost like you asking me, like, which my favorite kid is on a podcast. I feel like I would be a little bit remiss to answer.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. All right, thanks for that. I think we're close to wrapping up. But I wanted to ask you about anything that you were, and you don't necessarily have to tell me specifics, but
sure.
Were there things in 30XX that you were not able to make come to fruition that you are maybe holding for a future game or just figuring out how to do?
Probably not. We're still in alpha here, or pre-alpha, whatever you want to call mm-hmm. it. We're not in early access yet. We're not in 1.0 yet. So there's a lot of time between now and when we sort of say this is 1.0. And on top of that, we really see 30XX as kind of, we're trying to make it into a genre standard. We want this to be the kind of regularly updated game, even after 1.0. Where you can come back even after, you know, you've really played the game to death and moved on. We want there to be new stuff for you to come back to every couple of months, however, whatever cadence is comfortable for you, and sort of see new content while getting to, you know, sort of relax with the kind of really crisp action platforming that you've come to love from playing it as much as you have. So we really want to continue to support the thing really long term, like several years past 1.0, which means it's pretty unlikely there are specific ideas for 30XX that we can't use because we'll probably just use them later in development. Almost all of the things we really want to do really become a matter of when instead of if.
Nice. All right. And for the occasional fan of a roguelike like myself, what other roguelikes would you recommend?
Oh man. So if you're, you know, obviously Rogue Legacy as a great action roguelike or roguelite, is sort of a wonderful first foray there if you haven't played the sorts of games. If you really love the permadeath and the tough action, Dead Cells is obviously a huge hit, has done very well, is a very excellent game. In terms of just other kinds of replayable games outside of just sort of 2D action side-scrolling, big ones for us, it's not a roguelike by really any stretch of the definition, but it's a very replayable, random map-generated co-op FPS called Deep Rock Galactic, where you're your space dwarves doing all sorts of mining and bug extermination and stuff like that, which is very well made. Fantastic fun for up to four people. If you're into roguelike strategy, I mean, obviously, Slay the Spire is the big hit, so I'll just mention that in passing and skip over to For the King, which is a randomly generated sort of roguelike board game that you can play with up to two other friends, where you're sort of moving, you know, your characters around like a big fantasy board and doing quests and having, you know, sort of random turn-based battles, and it's really, really stellar stuff. I personally love the era of replayable gaming. You know, we've had replayable multiplayer gaming forever, right? You know, if you just go back to Doom 2, to StarCraft, you might be seeing the same maps, but the fact that you're playing against different people gives you unique situations every time you play. So I sort of see the advent of the roguelike genre over the last 5 years or so as kind of being like a single player answer to that.
Absolutely. All right. Good answer there. Good choices.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
All right, so now I'm going to ask you a few silly questions, and then let you get out of here.
Yeah, sure thing. We have 1 minute. Let's do it.
1 minute. All right, rapid fire. Go-to meal at your favorite restaurant.
Sorry, say that one more time for me.
Go-to meal at your favorite restaurant.
Whew, man, I don't even remember what restaurants are like. it has been a very long time. Go-to meal at my favorite restaurant. Man, there is we lived in San Francisco for a year or so, and they made a fantastic pesto turkey melt just down the street from me where I lived, which is definitely my go-to.
Nice.
When I lived there.
Was. Okay. Favorite movie theater snack?
Favorite movie theater snack? I'm simple. Just gotta be just buttered popcorn.
Nice. And what's the last game you completed?
The last game I completed. It's a really good question because we're in this era of, you know, new replayable everything, right?
Yeah.
So what does completed even mean anymore? The most recent game I completed is probably Gunfire Reborn. It's another roguelite FPS with a huge number of permanent upgrades that you can enjoy with a couple of friends. We, you know, finished our first run through of that as a squad. I don't know, a couple of days ago. I won a Fall Guys crown yesterday. Is that completing? Nice. Who knows? That
absolutely counts as completion. Good job. All right. So, Chris King, Battery Staple Games, thank you so much for your time.
Yeah, of course. Thank you for having me.
Wishlist 30XX right now and go to BatteryStapleGames.com for more information. Thanks for being here, Chris.
Yeah, of course. Thank you so much for having me.
It's a blast. All right. Take care, buddy.
Cool. Bye. Take it easy. Bye.